Morning. Today's daf and Shabbos, Sadi Vav. Yud Hashem, God willing, today we're going to be finishing the 10th parak of the Masechta, beginning the 11th parak. Here at the end of the 10th parak, a little bit of Tumat Taharim, specifically as it relates to Kli Cheres. This is a topic that obviously does not come much in Daf Yomi. Talmud Bavli does not spend time with Seder Taharos. And so, admittedly, this is not an area that we are all that familiar with, but nevertheless, so we get to spend a little bit of time together learning about some details regarding Tumas Kli Cheres. An earthenware utensil is going to become Tame once it's designated as a Kli, but the Tuma is only going to come about only when the Ava Tuma, when the source of the Tuma is hitting the interior airspace of the Kli Cheres. If coming into contact with the external surface area, so the Kli Cheres does not become Tame. Fine, that's something that is basic. The Gemara yesterday went over some other, for the Gemara, this is basic information. For you and I, it's not such basic information, but some other details regarding Tumas Kli Cheres. So yesterday, parenthetically, why are we discussing this here at the end of the 10th paragraph of the Masechta? So it's because of a Mishnah that we saw yesterday. The Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadi Hamad Aleph talks about making a hole in a pot. Pot meaning that the pot itself is made out of earthenware, and there's a hole in the pot. And as far as the Mishnah is concerned here in Shabbos, the discussion is really much more relevant regarding whether or not the contents of the pot are considered grounded. If they are considered grounded and you pull a vegetable or any vegetation out of the pot, so one would be in violation of the Malach of Tolesh. So that is really what the Mishnah was interested in. But as long as we talked about a earthenware pot and it was hovering over the ground, so the Gemara used it as an opportunity also to speak about the status of this pot regarding Tumat Tahara as well. And so that is how we got onto the topic. And so for the first part of today's daf, not even for the first quarter of today's daf, we're going to be discussing a little bit more about this issue of Tumat Tahara. Let's go over a statement of Rava that we saw yesterday, and that is Chamish Midos B'Kli Cheres. And when it comes to a Kli Cheres, there are five levels, five different holes that will affect the status of a Kli Cheres. Holes number one and two don't really remove it from the status of a Kli. Hole number one is where the hole is so small in the Kli Cheres that the only thing water can do is water can seep out through this hole, but the water can't even enter into this hole. So that's the first of the Midos, the first of the holes that were described by Rava yesterday. Under those circumstances, it's a kli for all intents and purposes. So then why mention it whatsoever? So we are going to be discussing it at the beginning of today's shir. Not the beginning, but towards the beginning of today's shir. So hole number one is where the hole only allows water to come out, but not even water to come in. Hole number two, a little bit larger than that, and that is where it allows water to go out and to come into the kli cheres. At that point in time, it still is a kli. However, the only thing that it cannot be used for is to be mekadesh mechatas. We know that in order to prepare a solution of the ashes of the paraduma together with the mayim chayim, with the natural spring water, so it has to be made in a kli. The Torah says it. It has to be el keli. And so as a result of that, so it has to be something where water cannot come in and come out. So once water can come in and come out, it no longer qualifies as a kli to be used to be mekadesh. But it still has, in general, a shem kli. And therefore, it is going to be susceptible to tumah. Number three, the third size hole, is that a small root can penetrate through this hole. So at that point in time, it's tar malahachshir bo zrayim. Now, as we described yesterday, so we know the following halacha, that when it comes to any fruit or vegetable or food for that matter, in order to it to become tameh, it has to come into contact with a liquid. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, it only has to come into contact with a liquid after it's detached from the ground. If it is connected to the ground and it comes to contact with a liquid, it's not mukhshar lekabel tumah, it's not ready to receive tumah. Okay, and this is a point that we clarified yesterday. And as far as when it's connected to the ground and when it's not connected to the ground, so this is what we're discussing here in the third midah of Rava. And that means to say that if the hole in the pot where the vegetable or the fruit is situated is large enough where there is a small root penetrating through that hole, so then the contents of that pot are considered as if it's connected to the ground. It is now literally and figuratively grounded. As a result of that, that fruit and vegetables that come into contact with the liquid is not going to be mukhshir lekabel tumah. That was hole number three. Hole number four, obviously we're getting progressively larger. Hole number four we described yesterday is that the hole is so big that olives now are going to fall out of the kli cheres. Once the olives fall out of the kli cheres, so then it's no longer a kli. And it's at this point in time now that the status of the kli has been lost, and it no longer is considered a functional kli, and that's hole number four. Hole number five is that pomegranates come out. Now, pomegranates come out, obviously that is a much more sizable hole, and at that point in time, it's no longer a kli. And as we already explained yesterday, but I'm just going to quickly reiterate, if it lost the status of a kli when the olives fall out, so certainly it's going to no longer have status when pomegranates fall out. What exactly happened between stage number four and stage number five? So Rashi yesterday, in yesterday's daf, so he explained that what happened was is that when the hole got large enough where the olives were falling out, so at that point in time, it loses the status of a kli. However, you can at that point in time reassign it. And Rashi says that if you decide that, look, I understand that right now it's a pretty large hole, but I need somewhere to store my pomegranate. So if you reassign it, so you can in fact now give it a new status of a kli based on your reassignment. And then now it's going to have the status of a kli. Again, you're using it now for pomegranates, but once the hole is so large that even pomegranates fall out, so at that point in time, it's not going to be a kli at all. That is a quick recap of the five different midos of Rava that we saw yesterday. And from there, we're going to pick it up in the Gemara as we are now towards the bottom of the Amud. V'im hukaf samin psil ad shiv chas rubo. Now, I think we read this yesterday, but let's spend time now discussing this last halacha as it relates to a kli cheres, and that is, let's say it's sealed. Now, we know the psukim in the Torah speak about this in Parshas Chukas, that when I have a kli cheres and it's sealed, that means that there's a lid on top, and not only is there a lid on top, but it's sealed so that there is a hermetic seal between the contents of the kli cheres and that which is outside of it. So at that point in time now, you have totally shielded from tumah. You could take this kli cheres with a sealed lid on top of it. You can put it into a house that has tumas mace. And that kli and the contents of that kli are going to be protected and shielded from tumah. Again, this is just simply the properties of a kli cheres as it relates to tumah. Now, here is what the Gemara is saying. That if it has a sealed lid on top of it, so at what point in time now is it going to be shielded from the tumah? Ad shipaches rubo. Until, let's say, there's a gaping hole in the side where it covers the majority of the height of the kli cheres. Now, here's what the Gemara seems to be saying. And when I say seems to be, this is exactly the way Rashi describes it. It means to say that if you have a kli cheres and it's got a lid on top and the lid is sealed, if you have a gaping hole on the side, but it is not the majority of the height of the kli cheres, so now it is still going to be impervious to tumah. Now, if you think about it, that's kind of hard to process. Meaning one would think that the reason why the lid and the seal on top are going to protect it from the tumah is now you've hermetically sealed it. Meaning there's just simply no way to get in. And what the Gemara seems to be saying right now, well, is if there's a hole on the side, as long as it's not a significant hole on the side, it's still going to be protected from tumah. Rashi says, you can see the second to last Rashi on the Amud, who says the Beferish, I'm reading the Rashi, Achiv ches rubo de chokli pasuach ksiv derech pesach nichneses lo tumah velo derech nekavav. The only way tumah can go into a kli cheres is only through its opening, its pesach, but tumah cannot go in through the side. Okay, so it's really tremendous chiddush. If you think about what Rashi's saying, is that I have a kli cheres, there is an opening in the kli cheres, but since it doesn't exist on the pesach, so therefore tumah is not going to go in. That is the way Rashi says it. In fact, if you want to see more on this particular topic, Tosfos on the top of Sadivavam and Aleph, second Tosfos, the long one. Tosfos discusses this in much greater detail. It's just difficult, just from a, I mean, again, how much do we know about tumah tahara? I'll speak for myself. How much do I know about tumah tahara that I could really appreciate and accept this as such a chiddush? But it doesn't, it certainly sounds like one. Well, Tosfos discusses this in much greater detail. And if you look in the middle of the Tosfos, Omari, where Tosfos basically asks a number of questions against Rashi, and then the Ri, one of the later Balei HaTosfos, goes and just defends Rashi. De'enim kushus aperish ha-kushus, devadeh be-pesach nechneses tumah. Afilu derech nekev katan, ubi'inan ashi yisasim legamrei kol ha-pesach lahachi tzarech miruach. Meaning that the only access point for tumah when it comes to a kli cheres is only through the opening. That's why there has to be a lid. That's why it has to be a seal. And then all the other questions that were asked, I know we didn't go through the questions inside. All the other cases, I know we didn't go through them, but all the other cases were describing where they're also made as a Pesach. But if you have an opening on the side that wasn't designed as a Pesach, Tumah simply does not go in, does not enter into Kli Cheres in that fashion. So this is Rashi's Pshat in the Gemara. Again, it sounds like a tremendous Chiddush. Okay, we go back to the Gemara. We're going to continue it now from where we left off. Sadi Heimad Beis, five lines from the bottom. Amar Ravasi Shamati Kli Cheres Shiru Kemoti Rimon. So Ravasi says that I heard that a Kli Cheres, the shear is going to be the size of a pomegranate. Amalei Rav Hashem Lo Shamat Ala Bemukav Samit Psil. So maybe you've heard that halacha as it relates to the lid and the seal. The Gemara says, but wait one second. Vaha Rav Hu Damar Mukav Samit Psil Aji Paches Rubo. Now the Gemara says, yeah, but we've already established that when it comes to a Kli Cheres that has a lid and it's sealed, so we said that the only time the tumah is going to be able to penetrate is if it's a gaping hole on the side, so big that it represents the majority of the height of that Kli Cheres. So the Gemara now is bothered by the fact that, how can you tell me that a pomegranate size is going to be significant to the halachas of Samit Psil, of the lid and the seal, when meanwhile we establish that Rubo is going to be significant. So the Gemara says, halokasha, no, it's not difficult, as we turn to the top of Tzadi Vavam and Aleph, Habiravrave Habizutre. So the Gemara says that we're making a distinction between a large versus a small. And as Rashi explains over here, if it's a large Kli Cheres, so then the shear is going to be Rubo. If it's a smaller Kli Cheres, so then the shear in terms of when the lid and the seal are no longer going to serve and protect the Kli Cheres is only going to be when the hole now is the size of a Rimon. That's interesting. The Gemara makes this distinction, but it's only fair to ask, What is considered large, what's considered small? The Gemara doesn't really quantify. The Gemara makes a distinction, but the Gemara doesn't quantify the distinction. What exactly is going to be the difference between a large Kli Cheres versus a small Kli Cheres? On the top of Tzadi Vavam and Aleph, continuing, Amar Ravasi, Shonin, Kli Cheres Yura Bekones Mashke. As far as a Kli Cheres is concerned, the shear is going to be where water can come in. Velo Amru Mosi Mashke, Ela Le'in Gistera Bavad. Now, in other words, we're basically analyzing Shirim 1 and 2 that we went over in the beginning of Shir today. Shir 1 and 2 is where the hole is so small that order can only come out, not come in. Shir number 2 is where the hole is big enough where water can come in and out. Now, what was the significance of Shir number 1? Meaning, water can only come out, but water cannot come in. Now, what did we say? We said that it was a Kli, for all intents and purposes. Even the Kadosh Bo Mechatas, it's going to be a Kli. So the Gemara basically now is going to be explaining what is the significance of Shear number 1. Lo Amru, that's what the Gemara now is explaining, and let me read it again. Amru Avasi Shonin Kli Cheres Shear Bekonis Mashke Velo Amru Motzi Mashke Ela Le'in Gistera Bavad. So this first Shear of Motzi Mashke is only going to be significant for a Gistera. Now that means to say as follows. I had a Kli Cheres. It broke. The happens to be that it broke in a manner where I can still make use of a significant sizable shard of the broken Kli Cheres. And so now I'm making use of it. This is what in halach is referred to as a gistera. A gistera just simply is recycled Kli Cheres. A recycled simply means it broke, but it still has function, it still has utility, and I'm making use of it. So this is a gistera. Okay, but basically now, we understand that the Kli Cheres over here is on its last legs. And so therefore, if it gets a hole in it, and here now we're going to apply shear number 1. Even if the hole is so small that the only thing that water can do is come out, but the water can't even come in. But because anyway we're dealing with a recycled Kli Cheres, so at this point in time, even when the hole is so small and so tiny, nevertheless, it basically becomes now out of use. That's where shear number 1 plays a role. My Taima, and the Gemara succinctly says this. I'm Rav Zusha Bered, Rav Nachman Lefishein Omrim, have a gistera legistera. Because people don't say, hey, you know what? Do me a favor. I'm trying to make good with this broken shard over here. It still has utility. It's just got a little bit of hole in it. You know what? Let's bring another broken shard in order to collect and capture the liquid coming out. You don't do that. At this point in time already, since anyway the Kli Cheres here is out on its last leg, any hole whatsoever, as tiny as it may be, people are going to throw it out. Amar Ula Pligi Batrei Amarai Bemarava. Ula notifies us that in Eretz Yisrael there is a machlokus amongst the Amarayim. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Amin, Rabbi Yossi Bar Zabda. Charamar kemotzi rimon, charamar kisharish katan. So your two options are going to be either the size of a pomegranate or that of a root. In other words, going back to our five levels, we're describing over here shears numbers 3 and 5. Now, what is the topic that we're discussing over here? Obviously, kli cheres, but what aspect of kli cheres? So Rashi says over here that we're talking about hechsher zroim. And that means to say that we're going back to the discussion of at what point in time are the contents of the pot going to be considered grounded? How big a hole does there have to be on the pot in order so that there is communication between the pot and the ground below it? And so here we are saying that there's a debate whether it has to be the size of a small root or the size of a pomegranate. Now you'll note that Rava on yesterday's daf said the size of a root. So obviously one of these Amoraim are agreeing with Rava, one of these Amoraim are disagreeing with Rava. That's the way Rashi explains it. Admittedly, Tosfos explains the Gemara a little bit differently, but let's leave it right now for Rashi's presentation. Now the Gemara says, now just as a good mnemonic to help us remember this, so we're going to remind ourselves of the Mishnah Menachos. The Mishnah Menachos towards the end says that, look, some people can afford big karbanos, some people cannot afford big karbanos. And Echad Amar Beve Echad Hamamid Uvavashi Elibo Mechavin L'Shamayim. I didn't do a perfect job saying over the Gemara. Okay, but anyway. But the idea of the Gemara is that it doesn't matter if you're offering a large karban or a small karban. The point is that as long as you have the right kavana, so then a Kadosh Baruch Hu likes any karban as long as you are bringing it b'lev shalem. Good. So over here, what does that have to do with our discussion? It has to do with the fact that of the shirim that we gave, we went with the small shear and the largest shear. Now, if you think about the mnemonic, that's not true. We didn't go over the small shear and the largest shear, meaning we skipped over shears number 1 and 2. We started number 3, and then we went to 5. So how is that the largest and the smallest? So Rashi over here explains, well, you see, shear 1 and 2 doesn't take the status away of the kli. Shear number 1 has nothing to do with the kli cheres that is in its original state. It only has to do with the gistera. Shear number 2 only disqualifies it as it relates to being mekadesh mechatas. But outside of that, it's for all intents and purposes, it's a kli. It's only when we get to 3, 4, and 5, only then at that point in time, it affects the status of it being a kli. So in that range of 3 to 5, so we're going to go with the extremes, 3 and 5, and we're skipping over 4. Okay, so it's a bit of a long way to get to a mnemonic, but that's the mnemonic to help you remember if it helps us remember. Amar Rav Chinam Bar Kahana Mishmed Rabbi Elazar Kli Cheres Shiur Kamotzei Zeisim. As far as a Kli Cheres is concerned, at what point in time is it going to lose its status of a Kli Cheres? When the holes are so large that the olives are going to fall out. Umar kashisha bered the Rav Misayim ba Mishmei the Rav Lazar v'arein kekli galalim ukli avanim ukli adama she'im akadlan tuma lo midivrei Torah v'lo midivrei Sofrim. And at the point in time where now the holes are so large that olives are falling out, so it is tantamount to a kli made out of dung, out of stone, out of earth, meaning that if you have a kli made out of these very natural organic materials, so the kli now is impervious to tuma. So too is the kli cheres, which would be mekabel tuma, but now that the holes are so large that the olives are going to fall out, so then they are tantamount to these types of kelim, meaning that they have no susceptibility to tuma whatsoever. Rashi also notes over here that what about what we learned yesterday and what we reviewed at the beginning of this morning, and that is, isn't there a chance of reassignment? So over here, this Rav Chanina Bar Kahana is going to be arguing with what we said yesterday. In that, in Rav Chanina's viewpoint, there is no room for reassignment. Once the hole in the Kli Cheres is large enough where the Zeisim are falling out, at that point in time, it's not Mekabel Tuma at all, no chance of reassignment. That's the way Rashi understands it. Now, if it has a lid on top and it's sealed, so then it'll block the Tuma from coming in until the majority of it is opened on this side. We already explained this earlier this morning, Ad Kan Hadron Alach HaMatzniah, and that is the end of the 10th parak of the Masechta. And now we begin the 11th parak of the Masechta. What is the topic of the 11th parak? So you probably already heard me say this, but let's say it again. Topic is going to be Hotza'ah. Now at this point in time, you're thinking, again? The answer, yes, again. Where are we in terms of Hotza'ah? So in terms of Parakim, so this is now going to be hour. Now, the count over here gets a little bit fuzzy in terms of it, but let's say that Hotzah began formally in the end of the seventh perek. The last Mishnayos of the seventh perek started the discussion of Hotzah, giving us Klal Gadol. That is going all the way back to Ayin Hamed Beis, where the Mishnah at the end of the eighth, of the seventh perek started speaking about a general rule regarding Hotzah. The item that you're carrying has to have both a quality and a quantity to it in order to be chayv on the melach of Hotzah. The eighth perek in its totality was about Hotzah. The ninth perek, this is where it gets a little fuzzy. The ninth perek, in theory, is about Hotzah. It just happens to be that the first number of lot of the ninth perek went off on a tangent. But outside of that, the ninth perek also dealt with Hotzah. The tenth perek that we just finished also is dealing with Hotzah. And so the 11th perek as well. So if you want to count it up, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Again, 7 and 9, not in totality, is about Hotzah. But that's now, this is our fifth perek here in Shabbos that we are discussing Hotzah. Now, just a preview of coming attractions. The later prakim, this is it. The later prakim now are not going to be discussing Hotzah. Once we get to the 12th parak of the Masechta, we are going to be moving on to other malachas. Obviously, the Gemara has a lot to say regarding Hotzah. Day one of the Masechta, we knew this was going to happen. Day one of the Masechta, what was the first topic of the Masechta in Shabbos? Dav Beis Amud Aleph, the Mishnah, the malacha was Hotzah. And the first Mishnah and the first Sugya of the Gemara, going all the way to Dav Tes, took us through the Malacha of Hotzah. So obviously, this is a fan favorite of the Gemara. The Gemara likes to discuss the Malacha of Hotzah more than any other. Certainly in terms of Prakim, it's no question. In terms of Dapim, my guess would be, yes, that is probably the most discussed Malacha in the entire Masechta. We start off with our Mishnah, and let's just do a quick background and review of some basics before we start with the Mishnah. The Malacha of Hotzah, as we discussed in the first Mishnah and in the first Sugya of the Gemara, which admittedly now is 3 months ago, so it's not a bad time to review. The Malacha of Hotzah requires that a person does an Akira Nanacha, pick an item up in one Rishus, then transport it and bring it over into another Rishus. And specifically it has to be from Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim, or as we're about to learn, from a Rishus HaRabim to a Rishus HaYachid. Then and only then one violates the Malacha of Hotzah. What is Rishus HaYachid? Any area that is dalet al dalet as a minimum area of 4x4 tefachim and is minimally 10 tefachim high or 10 tefachim deep. How many walls does it have to go around it in order for it to be Rishus HaYachid? So for our purposes right now, let's say 3. Right? 3 is the easiest answer, although there is that's a simplification. It's a bit of an oversimplification. So when I have a structure that's an area 4x4 and it's surrounded by 3 walls and the walls are going up 10 tefachim high, or the mound into the ground, which obviously then is circumscribed within walls, subterranean, also are going to be a Rishus HaYachid. Once something has a status of designation of Rishus HaYachid, we have a principle, which we're actually going to see together, that Rishus HaYachid Ola Ad L'Rakia. The status of the Rishus HaYachid just simply continues to go up ad infinitum. That's a Rishus HaYachid. What about a Rishus HaRabim? So that too we defined in the beginning of the Masechta, and here we get to review. A Rishus HaRabim is a public area. It's an area that is going to be 16 amas wide, a road that goes through a town from one end of the town to the other. It has to be a public thoroughfare. Nowhere in the Gemara is it actually state that there has to be 600,000 people traversing through the Rishus HaRabim. There are hints and allusions to this in the Gemara, but it never says so specifically in the Gemara. The Rishonim touch on this issue. Rashi and Tosos in the beginning of our Masechta said that there needs to be 600,000 people traveling in order to qualify as a Rishus HaRabim. You can see Tosos saying this on Vav Amud Beis. Again, that's a very long time ago in terms of the Daf Yomi. So a discussion in terms of whether or not that's part of the definition of Rishus HaRabim. Meanwhile, carrying from a Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, and more accurately, doing an Akira in the Rishus HaYachid, and a Hanach in the Rishus HaRabim, that is the Malacha of Hotzah. Now, if I reverse that, if I do the Akira in the Rishus HaRabim and the Hanacha in the Rishus HaYachid, so that is called Hachnasa. Today, in today's daf, we're going to talk about the relationship between Hotzah and Hachnasa. Hotzah means to go out, Hachnasa means to come in. Now, there are other Rishuyas as far as Shabbos is concerned. There's what's called the Carmelis. A Carmelis is something in the middle. Now, Mina Torah, it is not a defined Rishus, but the Chachamim said that anytime you have this undefined area where it is in fact enclosed, and as far as its height, it's anywhere from 3 to 10 tefachim off the ground. So that area is going to be the status of a karmelus. Just recently, we talked about the front porch of the house. The front porch of the house where it's outside of your house, but at the same time, it's higher than the Rishus Rabim. So that area is a karmelus. This area of the karmelus, midrabanan, one cannot transfer from a Rishus Yachid to a karmelus, nor can one transfer from a Rishus Rabim to a karmelus, and the inverse of both of those. So this is a Rishus midrabanan. We're not going to be spending much time today talking about a karmelus, but we are going to bring it up. And then finally, there's also an area of makom pater. Makom pater, meaning it's not a domain at all. It is just simply an area that is relieved from any status whatsoever. And again, the definition of makom pater we're going to be discussing also in the course of this 11th parak. So we are really, in this 11th parak, going to be dealing with more of the definition of the malacha of hotza'ah. Up until now, the prakim prior, the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th parak, not so much the 10th. But the 7th, 8th, and 9th was really focused on shiurim, the amount that a person has to carry in order to be chayef. 10th parak dealt with some of the larger issues of doing partial of a malacha, participating as a partnership in doing a malacha, shnaim shasua, doing the malacha in an unusual fashion, that is kala achriyad. So we dealt with some of those bigger topics, and truth of the matter is those topics are not just limited to hotza'ah, those topics are more universal in terms of malachas. But here in this 11th parak, we are going to be learning about the defining features of the malacha of hotza'ah itself. And with all that stated, let's begin the Mishnah. Hazok mishus yachle rishus harabim. Now throwing. So here now we have already introduced a new facet to the malacha of hotza'ah. You don't have to pick it up and put it down from one rishus to another. Even throwing is considered the malacha of hotza'ah. Hazork Mirshus Yachid Rishus Rabim, throwing from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, Mirshus Rabim Rishus Yachid, or conversely, going from the Rishus Rabim to the Rishus Yachid, Chayef, one violates the Issa Daraisa of Otsa'ah, even though you just threw the item. Mirshus Yachid Rishus Yachid Rishus Rabim, Bamsa. Now, if you were to throw an item from a Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid, and it happens to be that the Rishus Rabim is in the middle, so now this throw has went through three domains, started in the Rishus Yachid, went through Rishus Rabim, landed in Rishus Yachid. What would be the outcome? Rabbi Kiva mechayev the Chachamim pochim. Rabbi Kiva says that one would be chayev, the Chachamim say that you would be exempt. The Gemara in tomorrow's daf is going to be discussing this debate in detail. So for now, I will leave it alone. Tomorrow, we're going to come back and discuss exactly what the issues are. Ketzad. Now, the Gemara here is going to introduce us to another facet about the Malacha Votza'ah, one that I would say typically people do not know, although it's right here in the beginning of the Mishnah in the 11th parak of Shabbos. Shtei gezuz tra'os zu keneged zu b'rishus harabim. So let's say you have two balconies and they're facing each other. So here, if you want a pretty decent visualization over here, let's turn our attention to a busy city street like Manhattan. And basically what you have is on one side, you have apartment buildings going up, on the other side, same. You have balconies extending. I understand Manhattan, not many balconies. But you have balconies extending. And the streets that are between them are the Rishus Rabim. This is not a halachic discussion. I mean, it is. But it's not. I'm not saying the streets of Manhattan are Rishus Rabim, although they probably are. But for a practical halach, in terms of the status of a city as big as Manhattan, so for that, you will speak to your local Orthodox Rav. But for the purposes of understanding the Gemara, so in this scenario now where I have balconies on Rishus HaYachid that are facing one another, and the Rishus HaRabim is right in the middle. HaMoshid V'Azorg Mezulazu Pater. So if I were to pass over from one to another, now going over a large city street, passing from one to another, admittedly, is going to be some feet. And you're going to be passing an extraordinarily large pole in order to do this. But just for the purposes of understanding, if I were motion, if I'm passing something over from one Rishus Yachid to another, through the Rishus Rabim, the Hazorek Mizu Lizu, or if I were to throw it from one to another, this is a little bit easier to imagine. So in these cases, you would be Pater. Hayushteyem B'Dyuta Achas, however, If, let's say, I pass from one balcony to another on apartments that are not on opposite sides of the street, but on apartments that are on the same side of the street. So over here now, what you're doing is that you go to your balcony, and you just simply either turn to your right or to your left. And there's going to be a balcony right alongside you. Now, the balconies are going over the street, but obviously the balcony itself is not part and parcel of the street. The balcony itself still qualifies as a Rishus Yachin. But now I'm passing from my balcony to the balcony next to me. Again, a balcony that's on the same side. So that's Diyuta Achas. So Shema Diyuta Achas, Hamoshit Chayev. So if I were to pass it from my balcony to the balcony next to me on the same side, one would be Chayev. And this is the Malacha called Hoshata. Now, obviously, it is in the family of Hotza'ah, but this is a new version, a new form of the Malacha of Hotza'ah, and we're going to give it a name. We're calling it Hoshata. And you would be chai if you did so. Hazorik Pater. Now, if you threw it, you'd be Pater. So this Malacha only expresses itself when you pass it over, not when you throw it over. Now, why that should be? The Mishnah goes on to explain. Shekach ha'isa avodos ha'levim, shtei ha'gal ha'zu ha'chazu, b'rishus ha'rabim, moshitim ha'krashim izu lezu, avalo zorkin. And the way the Mishnah describes it is that if we can envision exactly how the beams are put onto the wagons in the midbar, so once we have a picture of that, so then we're just going to take that model and translate it into the buildings and the street like we just described. So for a moment now, let's go over exactly what it looked like as they were loading up the wagons. As we know, the Mishkan was constructed and deconstructed every time the Jewish people moved in the Midbar. Now, in terms of the big ticket items of the Mishkan, so those were the krushim. Those were the large beams. The large beams that surrounded the Mishkan. And we are going to start today, and this is going to be a continuing discussion throughout this perek, because this serves as a model of Hotza'ah, so we are going to be discussing in detail these krushim and how they're going to get loaded onto the wagons. Right now, we're just going to take a broader look at what happened. What happens is that you had four wagons in total that were large enough in order to hold all the krushim of the Mishkan. And what happens is that you have these four wagons. Now, in terms of how these wagons configured, so basically they made up a square, right? They were in four corners. And what happened was is that they were parked in front of the Mishkan. And now what you would do is that you would load up each of the wagons, and now the wagons themselves, as we're going to see, are a Rishus HaYachid. They were large enough where they actually qualified as a Rishus HaYachid. The surrounding area around the wagons, that's Machane Levia, that's a Rishus HaRabim. And so therefore, as you are now bringing the beams onto the wagon, you're transferring from a Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim. Now what's going to happen is that these beams are going to get distributed amongst all four wagons. And so basically now these wagons are parked where you have basically two rows, or better stated, two columns. And so when one wagon gets filled up, so now the beams are then going to get passed on to the wagon in front of it. Not to the wagon across from it, but the wagon in front of it. And the same thing is going to be true with the other wagon. Once the beams get loaded up and it's full, so now the beams are going to get passed to the wagon in front of it. And so now, if I'm doing a good job giving us a picture, so now basically what we're looking at over here is the balconies, which are on the same side, versus the balconies that are facing one another. So the balconies that are the same side are going to be comparable to the wagons where I'm passing the beams from one wagon to the wagon in front of it. That's analogous to Diyuta Achas. However, the beams were not passed across from one wagon to the other. That's Shtei Diyutos. That's basically the two facing balconies. So since this serves as the base model of what the Malacha is, and as the Gemara is going to tell us a little bit later on, these beams were not thrown, and simply because they were too large, and I'm going to show you Rashi in just a moment that says that. So since they were passed, so once again now this serves as a base model for the Malacha of Hoshata. Hoshata is only going to be violated when one passes the item from one balcony to the other balcony, since the beams themselves are being passed from one to another. Everything I just described is all in Rashi. I'm not going to be reading the Rashis inside. However, the last Rashi on our Daf and on our Amud, and the last words of the Rashi, Avalozorkin, last line of Rashi, Shein Osan Krashim Nizrakos Mimnei Kovdan. The reason why the beams were not thrown is simply because the beams were too heavy. And so therefore, they were passed, and this defines the malacha of Hoshat. We are now on the top of the Amud Beis. We're starting with the Gemara. Michtei. The Gemara says, let's think about this. Zrika talada da hotzahi. That as far as throwing, it is a subcategory of Hotzah. Hotzah gufa hechiksiva. Where do we find Hotzah in the Torah? The Gemara's question over here sounds to us to be a little bit strange. Where is Hotzah written in the Torah? Where are any of the malachas written in the Torah? The Torah does treat us to the malacha of Eish. Lo saviru Eish b'chol mashvasechem. So the Torah does speak about Eish, but why is the Gemara asking about where are we going to find Hotzah in the Torah? Truth of the matter is, we're not going to find the vast majority of the malachos in the Torah. It's part and parcel of Torah Shvah Peh. Why is the Gemara asking this question? Tosfos on the top of our Amud speaks over here fundamentally. This Tosfos we already made at the point we made at the beginning of the Masechta, but it addresses our very question. Hotzah gufa hechik siva v'afagav. Shahisa b'mishkan kedamer heimorid krashim me'agala mikoma kom ilav dichsiv lo have mechayva Allah lefish malacha guruhi. So Tosfos makes his fundamental point that he made on day one of the Masechta, and that is that the malacha of Hotzah is a malacha grua. It's an inferior malacha, and every time we say this, I highlight the fact when I say inferior malacha, it is just as liable as any of the other malachas. It would be punishable by death, just like any of the other malachas. It is inferior in the fact that when you're doing the malacha v'sa, what are you doing? You're not creating. You are not doing any kind of skilled activity. You're not cooking. You're not sewing. You're not preparing a hide. You're not building. It is not a skilled material. All you're doing is simply transferring from one location to another location. The malacha of v'sa, as Tosfos describes as being a malacha grua. If the Torah had not articulated this malacha, so then we would not file under one of the malachas of Shabbos because of this inferior nature of the malacha. That is why the Gemara now is looking for a pasuk in the Torah to teach us about the malacha of Hotzah. And now with that question stated, so now let's answer the question. We are the second line down. I'm Rabbi Yochanan Damar Kravi Yisav Moshe Bayavir Kol Bamachaneh. So Moshe gave instruction, and he told everyone to stop sending things to the Mishkan. He has enough donations. Moshe Hechan Havi Yasib, where was Moshe located? By Machne Leviah. He was situated in Machne Leviah. Machne Leviah, Rishus HaRabim Hava. The Gemara assumes that Machne Leviah is a Rishus HaRabim. V'kamer lo Yisrael lo Safiku v'seisim Rishus HaYachid Ditchu l'Rishus HaRabim. And the instructions are to the Jewish people, don't bring from your house, which is a Rishus HaYachid, to Machne Leviah, which is a Rishus HaRabim. So this is where it stated the Malach of Hotzah. The Gemara pushes back. Umi mai, de b'shabes kai, dilma b'chol kai, umi shum d'shlim ulei malacha, ki d'chziva ha-malacha ha-isa dayam. The Gemara says, first of all, it could simply be a regular weekday. Moshe's instructions of not bringing simply could be a virtue of the fact that we don't need anymore. It could have been Tuesday. And it just simply, Moshe was saying, stop bringing because we have enough. Can't that be the simple understanding of the psukim? And it has nothing to do with Shabbos and the malacha v'tzah. So Gemara Avar Avar Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says we have Gzeira Shava. Ksiv Hachava Ya'avir Kol Bamachaneh. Uksiv Hasam Va'avarta Shofar Trua. Malahalam B'Yom Aser Afkan B'Yom Aser. The word Avarta through Gzeira Shava connects us to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur Va'avarta Shofar Trua. That is a reference to Yom Kippur. Really, it's a reference to Yovel. But Yovel on the Yovel year. So you're blowing shofar on Yom Kippur. So it's a reference to Yom Kippur. And just like over there, that's a Yom Aser, right? Yom Kippur has the status of Shabbos, Shabbaton. So too, the Psukim, where Moshe is instructing them not to bring it, also is talking about Yom Aser. And that means to say that the reason why he's telling them not to bring it is because it's Shabbos. Ashkechan Hotzah Achnasa Minalan. So the Gemara says, fine. So what we have now is a source to teach us about Hotzah, carrying from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim. So, how about Achnasa? Going from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. Now, we learned the Mishnah that told us that that also is a malacha, but where do we see that? Meaning, again, we need, for this malacha grua of Hotza'ah, we need a source for it, otherwise it's not a malacha. So the Gemara says, Svaruhu. So the Gemara says, okay, I don't have a source, but logic would dictate. Michtim, Rishus HaRishushu, Mali Afuki, Mali Iyule. In other words, the definition of the malacha is to go from one Rishus to another. So what difference does it make whether I go from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim or if I flip it? The Gemara says, okay, so now we've established that both of them are a violation of Shabbos, but in terms of categorization, the Hotzah is the Av Malacha, and the Hachnasa is a subcategory to Tolada. Umichti, Ahamichai v'Ahamichai v'Amaykarilei Av v'Amaykarilei Haytolda. Gemara asks a very basic question. Well, if they're both violating Shabbos, and one would be liable for a karban if one did it b'shogeg, or a misa if one did it b'mezid. So at this point in time, why are we going through this organization of calling one an av and the other tolada? So nafkamina, the Gemara says, well, there is a nafkamina, and that is the av shtei avos b'hadei adade, inam shtei toladas b'hadei adade mechayev tarte. So the Gemara here goes over the basic rules that we've gone over in the past, but the Gemara reviews. If one violates two avos on Shabbos, you're chayev a karban chatos for each of the avos. And if one violates two tolados, and not related tolados, meaning a tolada of one av and a tolada of another av, so then one would be chayev two karbanos. The av v'tolada didei lo mechayev alachada. But if one violated an av and its tolada, so you would only be chayev one karban chatas. And so the Gemara says, so that obviously now becomes the significance of this kind of organization, meaning that when you violate on Shabbos an av and its tolada, so because it's in the same family, so from a carbon perspective, you're only going to be chayv one carbon. The Gemara says that's very good. It's an important answer, but not all Tanaim are on board with this answer. And specifically, Rebbe Lazar. Ule Rebbe Lazar mechayv atolada b'makom av, amaykar le'av, amaykar le'tolada. Now it happens to be that Rebbe Lazar is of the position that when one violates an av and its tolada, one is in fact going to be chayv two carbon chatzis. He simply disputes this premise. And so, according to Rebbe Lazar, what then becomes the importance and significance of going over this organization of what's an av and what's a tolada? Haftahave b'mishkan chashive karilei av. Haftalohave b'mishkan chashive lo karilei av. So the Gemara says that which was in the Mishkan and is chashav. Now, in terms of reading this line of Gemara over here, Tosfos does have a couple of yourselves in terms of how to read it. I'm really just going to go with one right now, but for more details, in terms of how to read this, see the fourth Tosfos on our Amud. But Hach David b'Mishkan Chashiv Kari Le'av. So that which is in the Mishkan and is also significant is called an Av. Hach the Lo David b'Mishkan Chashiv Lo Kari Le'av. That which is not in the Mishkan, the activity that was not in the Mishkan, is not going to be significant and therefore is not going to be referred to as an Av. And so in our examples, let's say, for Hotzah, since the going from the Rishus Yachid to the Rishus Rabin that was in the Mishkan, that's going to qualify as an av. Hachnasa, which was not in the Mishkan, so that's going to be the tolada. Inami hachtek sivi kari av, ha'idolok sivi kari tolada. Or the other way to distinguish is that which is written is going to be considered an av, and that which is not written is going to be tolada. Admittedly, that's good for hotza'ah. For the other malachos, the second way, the second approach is a little bit challenging because by all the other malachos, it's not written in the Torah, so this distinction only really exists by hotza'ah and by none of the other malachos. And anyway, what we just done is we just explained what's the significance of Av and Tolada according to Rebbe Lazar. According to the Chachamim, who disagree with Rebbe Lazar, obviously there is practical nafkaminas in terms of how establishing what's an Av and what's a Tolada. Okay, so what we have now done in the first half of our second Amud of today is we've established the sourcing of the Malach of Hotza'ah, the sourcing of the Malach of Hachnasa, and the definition or the organization that the Hotzah is an Av, and the Hachnasa is a Tolada. The Hadidan, the Gemara says, okay, but we're not finished yet, because that's not the only forms of Hotzah. What about that which we learned in the Mishnah? Hazorg dalamas bekosol lamala miyotvachim kezorg ba'avir. Lamata miyotvachim kezorg ba'aretz. Vazorg ba'aretz dalamas chayiv. What about the idea of throwing something for Amos and Rosh Hashanah? Now the Mishnah we're going to be doing and discussing in much greater detail a couple days from now. Throwing it against the wall. It sticks to the wall above 10 tefachim, one would be potter. If it goes and sticks below 10 tefachim, one's going to be chayv. We're going to discuss this in much greater detail in a couple days from now, so let's wait. In the meantime, and if I throw four amas and Rosh Hashanah, one's going to be chayv. And now the Gemara says, so what did we just learn? The version of Otsa of throwing four amas in Rosh Hashanah. Zarek dal amas, Rosh Hashanah, minan de bechayv. How do we know that one's going to be chayv? What is this? Throwing four amas in Rosh Hashanah. It's not going from one rishus to another. It's just simply traversing four amas and rishus haramim. And not even traversing. Throwing an item four amas and rishus haramim. Where does that come from? I'm Rav Yoshe Shekain, Orge Yiriya Zorkin, Machtem Zelazet. So the Gemara now was going to try to find some sort of precedent where this was in the Mishkan. Now the sourcing of the Gemara over here, eventually the Gemara is going to end up saying it's Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, Gemara Gemira La. But even at this juncture of the Gemara, it's a little bit challenging to understand. Because the Gemara now is not going to be setting any psukim. The Gemara is just simply going to be speculating, well, while they're working, here's what we think they're going to look like when they're working, and that's why it qualifies as a malacha. So it's certainly interesting that the Gemara is trying to find a source, not based on a pasuk, but based on our best guess of what their work looked like. Okay, so, I'm Rabbi Yoshia Shekin Orga Yiriya Zorkin Machtem Zelazeh. The weavers are throwing needles from one to another. So the Gemara immediately jumps on that suggestion. Organ machtem lamalu. Weavers, they don't have needles. So elishakein tofer yiriya zorkin machtem zelazeh. Okay, the Gemara, quick correction. We're talking about the stitchers throwing their needles one to another. So while they're stitching, so one says to another, hey, could you pass me the needle? Sure. And they're throwing needles. And again, the assumption is that they're in the Rishus HaRabim, and therefore this now serves as a source for the idea of throwing dal amos in the Rishus HaRabim. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? How do I know that they were sitting 4 hours apart? Social distancing? Not necessarily. So the Gemara says, Mati hadadi b'machten. So the Gemara says, well, if they sat so close together, they're going to end up stitching one another. So they needed that distance in order to create a safer environment so that they don't end up poking one another. The Gemara says, Dilma b'sochar b'ahavi yasfei. Okay, the Gemara says, that's fine. So they kept a safe distance. How do you know a safe distance is 4 amos? Maybe it's less than 4 amos. Alam Rav Chisda Shekin Ori Yiriya Zorkin Buchyar B'Yiriya. So the Gemara says, well, okay, so let's go to the weavers. Maybe the weavers, they're throwing shuttles one to another, right? The one weaver says to the other, hey, can I borrow your shuttle? Sure. And they're throwing now the shuttles one to another. Or even in the course of just the act of weaving. So as they're throwing the shuttles one to another, so maybe that's it. So the Gemara says, Valo Ogdobiyada. Wait 1 second. The shuttle has string attached to the shuttle. That's the whole point of weaving, is that you're going to be sending the shuttle with the thread through the parallel lines in order to weave. So the Gemara says, so this is not what we're looking for. We're looking for throwing an item, no strings attached. Thank you, that's my pun for the day. So, and this is not going to be a good source. So the Gemara says, Beniska Basra. So the Gemara says, well, maybe they're throwing the shuttle for the last throw, and for that last throw, it exhausts the thread, and so therefore you're just throwing a shuttle. Isn't that the source? So the Gemara says, V'haba makam patra kazla. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. You're throwing the shuttle through the garment. The garment itself qualifies as a karmelis. So this is not going to be a good source because we're looking at throwing through Rishus HaRabim. Elishikin orge yiriya zorkin buchyar l'sho aleihem. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what they're doing is that they're throwing shuttles to somebody else who needs to borrow one. So the Gemara says, V'dilma gabi hadad aviyasfe. And again, the Gemara now asks a series of questions. Again, this is all conjecture. So the Gemara says, look, as long as you're conjecturing, so let me push back. First of all, maybe they're sitting next to one another. So mati hadad b'chefe. So the Gemara says, well, if they're sitting one against one another, they're going to be hurting one another while they're working. V'dilma shachufe hava mishachfe. So the Gemara says, well, they could be sitting close to one another, but basically in a staggered position. Meaning you can have them within proximity, but as long as you put them in a design configuration, they're not going to be hurting one another. And also the idea that they're borrowing shuttles from one another, it's a laughable idea. We have a price. Everybody had their own materials. Everybody had their own tools. Nobody needs to borrow from one another. And also, look, there is the idea of throwing in the Rishus HaRabim. There's also the idea of traveling in the Rishus HaRabim. So again, we're looking for sourcing for these versions of the Malacha. So the Gemara says, fine. So we're not going to have a source. We're not going to be able to find it in the Malachas HaMishkan. We're just simply saying over here that the Malachas of Zorik Dala Amos, the Malacha of Mavir Dala Amos, they are Gemar Gemirla. It is part and parcel of the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, and you're right. These versions of the Malacha are not going to be sourced in the Torah. Amar Rabbi Rama Shmuel, Mikoshesh Mavir Arba Amos Bershus Rabbim Hava. And now, as we are finishing off the daf today, we're going to be spending just a couple of minutes together talking about the Mikoshesh. Right? The end of Parsha Shlach. So we have somebody who is gathering. And, I gave it away. We have somebody who's being a Mekoshesh. And as such, he violated Shabbos. As such, what happened to him? So he did a b'mezid, he was put to death. Right? So what exactly did he do? And as a sub question, who was he? So this, the Gemara is going to be spending time at the end of today's daf, the beginning of tomorrow's daf. We'll start the discussion now, and we'll continue tomorrow. I'm Rabbi Yudah Mishmul, Mekoshesh Mavir Abraham, Mishpushos Rab Mamavim. So what did he do? So we all say that he gathered, which is one explanation, but it's not the only one. And here Rabbi Yudah Mishmul is quoted as saying that what he did is he carried four Amos in Rishos Rabbin. And obviously it is relevant to our discussion because we just learned together at the beginning of the 11th parak of Shabbos, the Malacha of Mavir, Dalet Amos. So obviously this position is relevant to our discussion. The Masnisa Tana in the Braisa was taught Tole Shava, that he plucked wood out of the ground. Rav Achav Reid, Rav Yaakov Amar, Amar Hava, he gathered. For some reason that one has gained the most popularity. Lamai Nafkamina, the Gemara says, now, it's all very good, but this is history. And obviously it's important to know the Malachas, but why isn't it important for us to know what the Mekoshesh did? So the Gemara says, Licha de Rav, the Amar Rav Matzasa Megillah Starim. Because the Gemara says that Rav encountered Megillah Starim. Megillah Starim sounds like a secret document, a hidden document. Basically, it was Torah Shabbat Peh, where before Torah Shabbat Peh was written down. And so therefore, what they did is they wrote for themselves notes, but they didn't publish it, they didn't broadcast it, and that's why it's described as Megillah Starim. So Bei Rabbi Chiya, and I found it in the Yeshiva Rabbi Chiya, that's where Rav learned. Uksiv Bei Isi Ben Yehuda Omer, Avos Malachos Arbaim Chaser Achas, Eino Chayev Ela Achas. I skipped the parentheses. So in this Megillah Starim, the following statement was read. And that is that there are 39 Malachos and you're only going to be Chayev one. And the Gemara says, that's not the pshat in this Raisa. Achas Vesulav Atanan. We've gone over this multiple times throughout our Masechta. Avos Malachos Arbaim Chaser Achas, there are 39 Malachos. Ve'avin Ba Manyan Alamali. Why does the Mishnah count that there are a total of 39 Malachos? I'm Rabbi Yochanan Shim Asim Kulam Be'alam Echad Chayev Akol Achas Va'achas. If I do all 39 in one halama and one Shabbos, you're going to be chayev 39 carbon chatzis. We've gone over this time and again. We've discussed this extensively in the seventh parak. Imam, so now, what is pshat in Megillah Starim? In other words, obviously it meant something, so the Gemara now is going to seek a pshat in Megillah Starim. So, eino chayev al achas mehem. And what it means to say is that of the 39 malachos, one of them you're not going to be liable for. But then the rest of it, a mystery. Which of the malachos does not carry with it a liability? Megillah Starim does not say. And now the Gemara says, at least we now know the following. Rav Yehuda Pshita Leid the Mavir Chayev. Umasnitzim Pshita Leid the Tolish Chayev. Rav Achav Rav Yaakov Pshita Leid the Ma'amar Chayev. And so, whatever position you take in terms of what the Mekoshesh did, what you see over here is that he was held accountable to the extent in which there was a capital punishment for the actions in which he did. So it would, however you define his action, at least you know that one malacha is not the one that was described by Megillah Starim. Mar Savar Hamia Lo Misafka, Mar Savar Hamia Lo Misafka. So in the very least, what we can say now is that each one does not have a suffix in terms of the way he's defining what the Mekoshesh did. So that's the only thing that we gain in terms of identifying what exactly was the malacha that was done by the Mekoshesh. Okay. Let's quickly recap. First part of today's daf, we went over and finished up the 10th parak of the Masechta, having to do with Kli Cheres, the five midos of the Kli Cheres, the nature of the lid and the seal on the Kli Cheres, and we went over these halachas of the Kli Cheres, finishing up the 10th parak of the Masechta. We began this morning the 11th parak. Here we are discussing the Malach of Otsah, but now we're discussing it in a much more detailed and organized fashion in terms of the nature of the malacha, what is the malacha, the various permutations of the malacha. In the Mishnah we went over being Zorik from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Arabim, otherwise known as Hotzah. As we have finished off learning this morning, that's the Av Malacha. Then going from Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus Yachid, that's Hachnasa, and that is a Tolada, that's a subcategory of the Malacha of Hotzah. We went over in the Mishnah throwing from a Rishus Yachid to a Rishus Yachid with a Rishus Rabbin in the middle, that machlok is between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. We didn't explain it this morning. In Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow morning, we will explain that machlok is in much better detail. In the Mishnah, we also learned together about the Malach of Hoshata, transferring from one balcony to another balcony that are on the same side of the Rishus Rabbin. since that looks just like the way the beams were loaded in the Mishkan, so therefore that files under the malacha of Hoshata, but specifically passing, not throwing. Since the beams were passed and not thrown, so too the malacha of Hoshata is only violated when it's passed, not thrown. The Gemara on the Amud Beis took us through the source of Hotzah, the source of Hachnasa, the source of being Mavir Dal Amos Bereshis Rabim, the source of being Zorik Dal Amos Bereshis Rabim, and that covers us through the majority of the Amud Beis. And then at the end of the Amud Beis, we went over the Mekoshesh. What exactly did he do? We know he was Mechal Shabbos. We know he was put to death. The Torah is not very clear what he did. The Torah only gives a description of Mekoshesh Eitzim. What exactly did he do? So three opinions amongst the Tanaim Amoraim in terms of what he did. The significance of knowing what he did is that at least now, given that we have Megillah Starim that tells us that there's one malacha that does not have with it the liability of Shabbos, so at least we know that whoever is explaining the Mekoshesh in the manner in which they do knows that that is not the one that Megillah Starim is making reference to. So that is what we gain by knowing the action of the Mekoshesh Eitzim.